Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise with us on what it takes to grow a business today. My name is Gary Lafter, your host and CEO and founder of the Growth Focus Partnerships, where we elevate experts in the field of tech and we turn them into authorities so that they can start choosing the clients as opposed to the ones being chosen. We turn their conversations into clients and their insights into pipeline. On this episode, I can't wait to get into this. We're going to be talking about what it takes to build a company today and the mindset shifts that need to happen if we are to continuously grow in a company. We're also going to be talking what works, what doesn't work, and more importantly, how do we grow in such a crowded marketplace? And maybe marketing 101 isn't what you should be paying attention to when it comes to growing a business in the tech field. So without further ado, let's bring my guest on for this show. Adam, it's such a privilege and honor to have you here today. Why don't you start the episode off by introducing yourself? Let's tell us a little bit about who you are and what is it that you do.
Cool. So I'm Adam Zucker. I'm CEO of a company called Cloverleaf AI. We're based here in Denver, Colorado. And I was an engineer for a really long time, about 10 years before we started the company, about 3.5 years ago. And I guess at a high level for me, what I love to do is I love to build products that actually help people and provide value. So rather than kind of chasing the last or the latest technological kind of innovation, it's figuring out, you know, how do you take what's out there and apply it to people's real world problems and solve them? I always think, you know, you mentioned marketing 101, but there's a line I love, which is people don't buy a quarter inch drill, they buy a quarter inch hole. So people, yeah, you know, they don't care about the product, they care about the solution and what it provides. So that's what we're really focused on. And we're applying technology and innovation to people's problems rather than kind of like, you know, a hammer looking for a nail.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, I love the attitude. It's always about outcome focus rather than product or service led. We're going to be diving a lot more into that mentality so we can help people today. But let's start with your journey. Let's dial it back a little bit, Adam. Let's tell us a little bit about her. As you said, you tell us a little bit about your journey, but what led you to launch Cloverleaf AI?
Yeah, so one of my oldest friends, Jeremy, my co-founder, actually came up with the idea originally. And just to kind of like ground this, you know, we call ourselves the first buyer intent platform for government sales. So we're aggregating videos of government meetings and using those to help people build more predictable and winnable pipelines when selling into the government. And so Jeremy's dad grew up in local government and was a single father. And so Jeremy went with him to a lot of the meetings and learned that they're really long and boring, but there's a lot of really important things that happen to them. And kind of back to that earlier thing about, you know, loving building products, you know, Jeremy told me about this idea a little over 4 years ago. And I pretty much just asked him one question, which was, no one else is doing this. That was all I wanted to know. Once he said yes, you know, we didn't know at the time exactly who our customer was. We just knew the basic premise was, does what happens in a government meeting matter to people? And that felt like an obvious yes. And it's like, all right, there's a customer out there for us somewhere. And so we spent a lot of time kind of doing market research and really figuring out who that best customer was and that best use case. And that's kind of how we land there today.
Well, let's talk about this. For those who don't know what Cloverleaf AI do yet, you know, who do you serve and what is the problem that you help them solve?
Yeah, so at a basic high level, we serve anyone who sells into the government, which is a huge bucket. You know, I think there's something like 650,000 government contractors in the US. And we're primarily focused at the state and the local level. The federal level is kind of its own beast. There's a lot of people that do that. That's crowded market. But the basic idea is that there's something called an RFP, which anyone who sells into the government understands and knows about. And that's how the government solicits bids and kind of, you know, contracts and gets vendors to come in. But the fact is that most deals are already done by the time the RFP is issued. One thing we talk about with our customers a lot, because we sell into sales teams, is that, hey, you know, if RFPs are all that mattered, you wouldn't exist. But there's government sellers all over this country, people who make relationships, and government sales is like any other sales vertical or you know, market, which is it's about building the right relationships with the right people. Areas we found particular sort of traction in is AEC, so architecture, engineering, construction firms. Public safety has been a big one for us, technology companies, et cetera. But you know, we have a really wide kind of range. We have renewable customers and energy customers. We just sold this month a company that builds playgrounds all across the country. So it's a wide range of customers. It's a huge open market. And it's really crowded on the RFP side. Like one more stat there is that the average win rate for an RFP when you're blind bidding on it, so if you've never seen it, is around 4% versus, you know, so you have to apply essentially 25 of them to win one. So what we're helping people do is just do a much better time of targeting, align their resources, and build those relationships so that they can become the preferred vendor far before that RFP is ever issued.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. So this is quite a shift for you, coming from obviously your technical expertise What mindset shift did you have to have initially, and perhaps you still have it, albeit changing, that takes you from technical expertise person to leading a growing company?
Yeah. Yeah, we have, I don't know, I won't swear, so I'll abbreviate or bleep it, but we have a line that we've been talking about for a while now in the company, and it's nobody cares about your stupid effing product. and it kind of goes back to that quarter-inch drill thing. But, you know, that mindset shift of people buy solutions, not products, right? And I think, you know, as an engineer by training, when I was first CEO, like, you know, I want to talk about how fast the platform was, how much data we you know, managed, and that doesn't fully matter. It's about, you know, how do we translate that to ROI? How do we help people understand, you know, A, why we're so valuable? But, you know, they talk, a lot of mentors in my life and advisors that helped me get to this point. And one early on talked about, like, you know, there's nothing better than the consequence of not using your product. So, hey, if you're not going to engage with us, here's what's going to happen to you, right? And you have to build a bit of a relationship first. You don't want to come out right and essentially threaten somebody of, you know, hey, if you don't work with me, you're going to have all these horrible things happen. But just helping them understand. And I think discovery is so important. I think my engineering mind and background led to that, where I look at my job as asking a ton of questions and just always digging deeper and trying to look at the underlying assumptions. But I think that big one of just moving past the product. When I talk to earlier founders than me, you know, I do my best. You know, I'm only 3.5, 4 years into this journey. I'm no expert, but I try to give back to what I can. And, you know, I see it with like early found people a year into their journey, you know, get into it because you believe in what you're doing, because you know you're solving a problem, and you get excited about that. And it takes time to move away from that and think, okay, but I'm building a business. And especially for someone like us, like, we're building a venture-backed business. That's a whole different beast, right? If we were a family-run shop, it'd be, you know, hey, we're plodding along to profitability and we're growing. And me and Jeremy, my co-founder, talk a lot, like, we got on the venture rocket ship. Like, you know, it's exponential growth. So it's not just about what, you know, we find personally interesting or, you know, what we think. It's looking at the market and thinking, how do we find our wedge in and how do we exploit that and grow that over time?
No, absolutely. Well, listen, I'm nodding here. My eyes are, if you ever see my eyes popping around, it's because you're dropping these little insights and truth bombs, as it were, and my brain's going, boom, 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 boom. Which bit do I talk to him about it first? Because I'm going to try and dial it back a little bit and break this down, because some of the stuff you just mentioned there for our listeners and for our viewers, although you just went boom, 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 and went through them, they're so important. They're so impactful. And no particular order, I want to break these down. First and foremost, it is, like you said, no one really cares at all about your product or service, especially in the tech world, where people fall foul far more often than not about build it and they will come. If I build it, it's going to be great and I love it. And yes, there's a passion about what it is that you've built or your service, but the field of dreams methodology just does not work. No one cares about that. It goes down to, like you said, what is the number one problem I solve and what is the outcome they will get by solving this. And that's a really big thing. And I don't think enough people are actually doing that. And if more and more people pick that up and ran with it and pick that particular ball up, they'll be far more successful, because people are going to say, they don't look and say, hey, I'm looking for this particular app today, or I'm looking for this thing. They're going to go, how do I solve this problem when I get into the office today? That's what I want to do. Secondly, what you say is just that pure passion of just coming out and saying, I know we have the best thing on the marketplace and you're an absolute fool if you do not take us up on this. And the thing behind that is the cost of inaction. And this is the whole key thing. I see people try and sell them to take action, but they're not selling the cost of inaction. Yep. And if you just help people by taking them down on that, and you come across doing that very, very well, say, look, this is going to happen to you. All hell and fury is going to come down on you if you're not doing this, which then leads into something else you said. And that is about early on. Well, it doesn't really matter about early on. Everyone's talking about this today. Trust is everything. And if you can't build that trust out there and can't say to them, look, we're here to back you, to make sure you're the very best that you can be, then you're just going to sound like everybody else in that noise. So that leads me to this question then. Building trust is everything. Doesn't matter if it's early on, like you, when you were first starting, or where you are today. How did you start building credibility, Adam, and trust without having traditionally the big name backing?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I spent my career as an engineer, and I think I used to look at salespeople as like they trick you into buying things you don't need, you know. And I think that's a lot of technical people look at salespeople like that, and I think maybe anyone who's not a salesperson looks at a salesperson like that. And, you know, I was introduced early on to the concept of like partnership selling, right? So, hey, we have value. We're only going to sell to people that we know we can provide real value for. And then, hey, all I'm saying is I'm going to give you value. You're going to trade me back value. Your value comes in the form of money. Mine comes in the form of a product or a service. In that sense, like for me, it was always important to really believe in what we were building and selling. And that was why, you know, when Jeremy came to me with this idea, instantly I was like, that makes perfect sense to me. I get, you know, like, I don't know exactly who the customer is, but that product, I can't imagine there's not a customer out there for us. Like, we're going to find someone who this is valuable for. So I think that's really important. We talked, me and Jeremy, you know, we try to do a lot of reading, you know, talking about growth mindset and like always trying to find people who are smarter than me, read about from people who are smarter than me. And one of the things we read at the end of last year was a couple of books by this woman, April Dunford, and they really kind of like gave us some frameworks of thinking. But she talked a lot in one of her books about what people are looking for nowadays. Like, buyers have so much more control and agency in the process, right? They can do a lot more research. The internet's an incredible tool, videos and content and all these things. And they want to do that. They want to be the one kind of pursuing things. And she said what they're looking for nowadays is like a guide to the market. And so we talk a lot about that. We're like, you know, I mentioned earlier discovery. We've labeled discovery for us as like the most important thing. And that's for us as we look for sellers within our company. We're looking for people who are super curious, who do a really good job uncovering. You know, you talked about like action, inaction. The word that keeps coming to mind is urgency, right? And that's a big thing in sales, right? It's like, how do you create urgency? People say create urgency. I talked to someone recently. They said, you're not creating urgency, you're uncovering urgency. And that kind of leads back to that curiosity thing and that discovery, right? So it's understanding and doing that discovery. And we do this a lot where it's like, hey, if we get to a point where it's, we can't help you, we're not going to sell you. We're going to say, hey, listen, it feels like this isn't a fit right now. Let's check back in 6 months. We're always building new things. Hey, you know, we've even talked about this, that people who are like adjacent or like kind of indirect competitors will push customers and prospects to them and be like, hey, we, you know, if you're looking for an RFP tracking tool, we don't do that. Here are these people, they're great at it. You should go talk to them. If what you're looking for is early signals and early intelligence to get a better pipeline, that's what we do. And doing things like that and not being pushy. I think that's, it's slow, right? At the beginning, to your point, like when you don't have a big brand behind you, you slowly build that reputation and that sort of like camaraderie and trust. It makes me think of one last quick story of, we had like one of our first board meetings. I was talking to one of the board members and, you know, saying it's a couple of years ago. And I was like, you know, every company has like an inflection point, right? Where just things seem to take off. And I was like, I know there's no like silver bullet, but is there some way we can like manufacture that for ourselves? You know? And he was like, you just do a million things. And at some point you look back and you go, hey, that thing 6 months ago was the one, you know? And I think it's like that with trust. Like, you just keep building it. And at some point you look back and say, hey, this was some big moment for us, or this is where it started to work. You can't know it in the moment. You just do the right thing day after day after day. And you trust that at some point it's going to kind of compile. And in the early stage, it's just, how do I stay alive for another day, another month, another quarter, so I can get to that point where things kind of start to click for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to what you said earlier about we're in an industry, your industry specifically in the industry, where it's a relationship. It's a relationship builder. And you do not know the relationship you start building today is going to bear fruits 6 months, 9 months, 12 months down the line. By not doing it, you will definitely not have that relationship. Yes. You just got to start doing it and doing it right. Like you say, keep on doing the right things. But I want to go back a little bit because this is such an important part. It's something we work with our clients a lot on. So I'm so glad you brought this up. It is the power of the discovery. The discovery call, and I love what you said. I've never heard that. And if you don't mind, I'm going to start using it as well.
Yeah.
It's uncovering the urgency. And how do you uncover it? But the power of questions that you ask in that discovery and have that curiosity mindset. Whereas what we're seeing today is more and more people who are just asking questions on the surface so they can get to the sale. And they're not asking deep enough. And they're not riffing. And then they're doing demos so they can show up and throw up. So, well, if I, let me do this very, very quick discovery. Then I'll jump into a demo. Because once we get into the demo, I can tell you how clever I am. I can show you how great this is. You've just left the person for dust now, and I'm wondering why you're not converting. Even though, again, stuff that you and I would probably take for granted, there's so much power in that. And you build relationships, how? By asking more questions or being curious. If you go back to some people love it and some people don't, how to win friends and influence people, there's a story in there which says the most important person in the party was the person that didn't talk the most, but the person who asked the most questions. Sure. And the person in that in the party became the most important person.
Yeah.
So that being said, Adam, you've talked about building relationships and starting relationships. When it comes to finding people to start these relationships from, you know, building this lead gen for you, you've got such a big marketplace out there. Yep. You know, two trains of thought: niche down, smaller market. Massive market that you can actually approach. When it comes to lead generation, you are got the VC back, so you are definitely in the field of run faster. All right, you're in that. You're run faster. But when it comes to lead generation, finding these people, what's working really well for you?
Yeah. So one thing that's been great for us, and I think, you know, to the larger point here, the more I learn about it, and you know, again, engineer, right? So coming into this, it's not like I was some lead gen expert, and you just try to soak it up. And you know, every product, who's your customer? It's going to be different, right? Some companies are going to be product-led growth. And we tried that one at the beginning. It didn't work for us. You know, it might work for us one day. It will work for us one day, you know? But, you know, we've tried a bunch of things. One thing that's been really great for us personally has been conferences. What's great for us is that we go to conferences where the exhibitors are our customers, so we don't have to sponsor them. We don't have to, it's not a huge cost to us. But, you know, I think when we're selling to salespeople, when salespeople are your target market, salespeople love to get in the room and shake hands and chuff it up, right? So what can we do to get in front of them, get their mind, and, like, you know, just get 3 to 5 minutes of their time just to introduce ourselves, put a face to the name, show them. The great thing about our product is it demos really quickly, really easily. So that's been incredible for us. You know, other than that, the classic sort of cold calling, cold email, just cold outreach. You know, when we talk about, back to that sort of like, who's your product? One of the things we've been doing over time, and I think the last couple of months especially, even getting a lot better about this, is moving beyond firmographics and demographics when defining your ICP, right? So I think when you first start, you just throw, you know, hey, companies of this size in this industry, maybe this title, it's always more complex than that, right? Like, how can you define characteristics? And there's some incredible tools out there today. You know, we use one called Clay. I've heard one called Common Room, but they're these like sales tools that give tons of enrichment around, you know, prospects, right? But for us, one of the things we've recognized is companies with a growth mandate. So, hey, companies that are scaling. So whether that's they have a bunch of open sales positions or they just released a recent round of funding, you know, one of the things we'll say is like, hey, you had your best year last year. Did your number go down? It's like, no. Okay, well then how are you hitting that new number? Well, that's where we come in. We're a pipeline generation tool, right? We're going to build you a higher quality, higher performing pipeline. So being able to move beyond that so you can target people, and kind of back to that building trust thing, when you call that person up on the phone and you get 30 seconds of their time, which is a miracle, right? Connect rates are 3%, 5%, you know, right? So it's a lot of work to get. It's how can you call them up and be able to say, you know, not just to your point of like show up and throw up and just start, hey, Cloverleaf AI, we, you know, but you say, hey, Jim, you know, I saw the incredible work you guys were doing in East Texas and all these couple of schools you built. Like, I'd love to spend, just take 10 minutes of your time, you know, later this week and show you how we could help you win more of those projects. And how can you, when you call them up, show that you called them specifically and you're not just a telemarketer vomiting out kind of, you know, a 30-second sales pitch. So I think that, and then, you know, we started as well with on the marketing side. I think, you know, it's a full spectrum thing, right? There's no one, I think we were talking about this internally too, about how you undervalue the things you don't understand, that's kind of like there's a human nature in that, right? And, you know, me and my co-founder are not marketers. So I think, you know, we undervalued marketing early on because we're like, well, we're just going to call people. Like we can get in front of them. We know we can convince them once we talk to them. But marketing gives you this sort of, you know, it helps to like round out your world and set this foundation. And people have already heard of you a little bit. Maybe they read a case study of yours, a white paper. And it gets, you know, I've been jokingly calling marketing passive income. You know, it's kind of like, it's like stocks. It's like even when we're sleeping, it's working for us. So it's just, how do you flesh out that whole world and know that like no one of them is going to solve the problem on its own? They all add to this bigger picture. And, you know, you start, my belief is with anything is you kind of start small. You get one thing right. You know, it's like the Bruce Lee quote. It's better to do one kick 10,000 times than 10,000 kicks once. So like, as I look through it, it's like, hey, I don't think we did anything wrong. Maybe we would have started certain things earlier, but you know, hey, we have this working. Let's move on to marketing. Like, let's get that spinning up. Hey, now we have that working a little bit. Let's press on it a little bit harder. Yeah, that's kind of like the way we look at the kind of the fleshed out world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And before I move on to marketing, because this is obviously a topic that most of our viewers and listeners want to hear is about, yes, it's great having these conversations and sales conversations and building relationships. We all know about that. But ultimately, we've got to do the lead generation and marketing to have those conversations. So before I jump to that, very, very quickly, I just want to You probably didn't even realize you said this, all right? And I just, so I want to hear for people who are watching this and that, when you're picking up that call and you say, hey, blah, 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 hey, Jim, blah, 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 saw you did this great thing in building that school. We want to help you get more of those contracts. It came off the tongue. It wasn't about the process. It was about the outcome. You got the outcome out in 6 seconds of what the does. And I think if more people were to do that, then cold calling wouldn't be so bad for both parties. I think we've all had to pick up those cold calls and we just get drawn into these long, my name is blah, blah, going there. You do this, we get you more of that.
Yep.
Is it worth another call? Boom. Yep. All right. Yep. It's outcome driven from there. So that was a really good point. I just wanted to highlight that. So let's go to lead generation. You talked about marketing. I love what you said there about it's passive income because it works when you're asleep. The marketing is constantly out there. Data points. We're now in a world where we know it used to be 7 touches.
Yeah.
They're now saying that people need to see, hear, consume 7 hours of you before they'll even do that in the day of social media. So a lot of founders really struggle with being seen as authorities within their field. It's a very noisy market. Everyone's claiming they're an expert in their field. And unfortunately, when everyone's an expert, no one's an expert, right? So you got a lot of this chest puffing, peacock flaring, listen to me, I'm great. What role has founder-led marketing played for you? And what kind of advice would you give other founders there who are trying to stand out above all the noise?
Yeah. We've kind of jumped on it recently. We engaged with a marketing firm at the beginning of this year, and we had it's not like we had never done it before, but we had kind of fits and starts. And you know, everything I've learned about it and what's been working is consistency is big. You know, so rather than saying I'm going to write a blog post every single day, doing that for 2 weeks and then stopping, let's do one a week, right? And let's do something we can manage. And, you know, I think a lot about, we were a Techstars company. That's how we started out. And they have this thing they say, and a hashtag, they talk about give first. And that resonated with me always. But I think in marketing, a lot of that, it's rather than thinking immediately, what do I get from this? It's what can I provide to the market? And what is my unique viewpoint? You know, I think as founders, we have different, it can be this podcast, right? This isn't me talking about my company a ton and all the ways that we understand government contracting better than anybody else, which, obviously I believe we do, otherwise we wouldn't be doing this. But it's, hey, I have a viewpoint, have, a sort of experience. And to the degree that that's helpful to people, I'd love to share that. And being consistent with it and, starting small and building those channels over time. And at the end of the day, I talk about working with that firm. And I think what's big for us is, and I've talked about several times with advisors and mentors, fundamental belief is if I'm always the smartest person in the room, there's something seriously wrong, right? I always joke, sometimes I'd like to be the smartest person in the room. Occasionally it'd be nice, but in general, how do I bring people, especially as a first-time founder, how can I surround myself with people who've been there before, who can help pattern match for me? And even more than tell me when I'm doing something right, how can they tell me when I'm on the wrong path? Because that's the one that's going to kill me, right? We talk about that a lot, that, taking an extra month to double down on the right thing is not going to crush your business, but taking an extra 2 months to stop the wrong thing can end you. And marketing is one of those things, right? I know when we first got the kind of proposal of how much it would cost, right? I tightened up a little bit I got a little sweaty, but there's marketing as a direct payoff, right? In theory, it's validated by revenue. And I think for us, one of the things I didn't understand until we started doing it is that marketing also helps you validate sales and kind of product decisions. And, you mentioned it a bit ago, you said about data, marketing is about collecting data and then validating that data. And the ultimate validation point is what ends in closed revenue, because that's ultimately all that really matters. But early on, it's just what's even getting impressions, what's getting demos, what messaging is working, and how do we use that to iterate on the sales side of things and the product side to make sure that we're building this. We talk a lot about internally the handoff between marketing to sales to product or customer success, right? And the story's going to change a little bit. And people know that, hey, when you're marketing, we're the, number one of this. And then sales is we define number one as that. And then product says here's what you're really going to get, right? Yeah. But it's got to be logical. It's got to flow. People can't feel deceived at every point. You're going to have drop off. So, how do you figure out a way to tell your story in a way that resonates with you and gets them really excited and gets them to that point where they're willing to talk to you? And then at that point, you can build that trust and that relationship, and then you can sell them. But
Yeah, no, I think this you've nailed it, several nails there on the head. You know, it's about telling your story. Yeah, there's an element, and we've talked about this many times on this show about founder-led sales. There's an element of founder-led sales, whether it be 5 million, 10 million, 20 million. There's always an element that founders still in the sales process somewhere. But the founder-led marketing has almost been kicked to the curb. It's there at the beginning. This is us. This is our mission. This is why we actually do it. And then once they get busy, they kick it to the side and go traditional marketing. And it's got nothing to do with the mission, nothing to do with the why. And that brings us back to thought leadership, which is another thing what you just said there. And I see one of the biggest mistakes that people are making, and you mentioned it very clearly there, it says, look, I have a point of view on this. How do I share this? Whereas what we're seeing more and more, and this is very much of a podcast of what works and also what doesn't work, is where people are just using AI now to churn out this generic thought leadership without even realizing, well, in reality, what is chat? What chat and LLM is a combination of everybody, which makes you average. So everything that's thought leadership is actually average. And now you're sounding exactly like everybody else again. Whereas what you said there, Adam, was very, very, very pertinent. I have a point of view on this. I have a belief on this. I have an opinion on this. And this is what I want to get myself out for. And that's where we're seeing tremendous growth in that, because people get to know you as a founder again and say, yes, this is a person I'd want to know more about. And you're absolutely right. Prospect lead marketing to sales to the actual fulfillment, you know, and client success. So we've talked about what works for you, Adam, which is fantastic. So let's look back. You know, we've the beauty about being entrepreneurs is that we're not afraid to make mistakes.
Sure.
We don't like them, but we're not afraid to make them, and we fail, we fail fast. Looking back over the last few years for you, what is one strategy or one lead generation channel that you tried that really didn't work and you learned from it?
Yeah. I think, so I talked about like the fits and starts. You know, we did like a content marketing thing about a year ago, and we were putting out a bunch of articles onto a blog and maybe promoting them a little bit on LinkedIn, and did that for a couple months. And then it just stopped. And we kind of did another marketing campaign where we tried, you know, using the tool to sell the tool and like giving kind of free leads out essentially. And that kind of fell on its face. And I think, you know, we were trying to solve the whole problem at once. And I think, you know, we had the same thing on the go-to-market side. We raised a seed round, you know, about 15 months ago. And after that, we closed that round. We went out and we hired 3 account executives, you know, and Jeremy, my co-founder, is our sales leader, and he's having tremendous success. And we're like, you know, we're like, we're just going to find another Jeremy, right? Like, that's what we're going to go do. And what a foolish idea that was, you know? Since then, I've been using the analogy of, I think a lot of people have seen the movie, but Moneyball. And it's, we have to build Jeremy in the aggregate, right? We're not going to replace him wholesale. No one's going to just come in and be the founder. No one's going to have the years of market experience and product knowledge and, you know, and passion. And no one's going to have that founder next to their name, which is a certain amount of magic, right? That helps sell. But I think we did the same thing with marketing in a sense, where we're like, we're going to solve the whole funnel all at once. And we should have thought more intently about, you know, back to the thing of like, what data can we collect early on? You know, looking at marketing as a funnel rather than as like a kind of, you know, A to, you know, just kind of like a two-step, hey, you serve an ad, you get a deal. There's so much in there. How can we first determine we're targeting the right people, right? How can we know we have the right messaging? There's so many like little steps, and think about top of funnel, like, you know, it's almost like, what's your connect rate, you know, to map it onto like a sales pipeline. Then, you know, does connect go to discovery call? Does discovery call go to demo? Does demo go to trial? Like, where are we falling off? And making sure you're getting the first steps before you try moving on to the, we're going to close deals off of this. And our goal is to get, you know, 10 closed deals done by the end of, you know, the quarter. So I think that like not understanding, you know, I think to your point, you know, entrepreneurs fail fast. We also want to succeed fast, right? So we're looking, you know, I had a mentor told me a while ago that your biggest regret will always be like not having done things quick enough. Like, you just want more, more, more. I always joke that I'm a CEO. I want everything done yesterday, you know, but things take time to build. And it's better to take a little bit more time, but actually be plotting along that path than to be kind of like fits and starts and trying to jump to the end. It fails. You have no idea why it failed. You just know that it failed. And that was a lot of our early marketing efforts. Was just they didn't work. And we looked back and we're like, it could have been 10 different things. I have no idea. You know, we tried, you know, what is it? Eat the whale in one bite, right? So I think that's a big mistake we made early
on. No, absolutely. And again, key messages there is KPIs, knowing your KPIs. And, you know, you're absolutely right. It's all kind of black and white. In fact, I was actually talking to somebody probably last week, and they'll go, well, if we want X amount of people into our webinar, we want to do this. So there's the marketing that's going to go to that. So it's almost like a black and white. If we do this, we do this. And I said, well, Oton, there's little hoops they've got to jump through first. You know, they've got to register, then they show up and stuff like that, and then your conversion rate and all these little KPIs, like you say, top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom of funnel. It's not just if we do this, we get this, and it failed. It's which part did it fail at?
This
is the most key point, you know, and that's a really point that you made there. So let's look into towards the future, Adam. Where are you aiming to take the company over the next sort of 12 to 24 months? Are there any particular revenue goals that you're aiming at or milestones that you're focused on?
Yeah. I mean, the goal right now, you know, we're approaching $2 million in revenue, making a big push to get to $3 million by the end of the year. I'm going to go off for that Series A fundraise towards the end of the year. My goal is to get a term sheet so we can kind of go build. You know, we're in a really strong cash position, which is awesome, especially in this market. You know, fundraising is not easy right now. And especially from what I've been hearing and reading, that seed to Series A is just a really tough jump and step to make. But, you know, we've identified kind of this burgeoning segment of a market, right? There's the B2B buyer intent space and sort of like, you know, sales intelligence is legacy and massive, but it doesn't exist for B2G. And we're really trying to position ourselves as the leading product in this new category. And so we want to go raise money and just run, you know, dump it into products, into marketing, into sales, and just press on our first mover's advantage. And, you know, then kind of 2x, you know, as fast as we can grow. I mean, it's crazy, right? We're at 12 employees right now. You know, we'll be at 25 or 30 by the end of next year. And, you know, 50 probably by the end of the year after that. And, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, back to your outcome based, like, you know, same thing with the business and like, what does that exit look like? Is it IPO? Is it acquisition? And, you know, I'm more outcome, hey, as long as we're hitting some sort of exit that really makes sure everyone's winning. But on the other end of that, what an incredible journey it is to be able to take a company already, you know, it started with me and Jeremy sitting in an Airbnb in Indiana, you know, making the first version of the product, you know, you got no customers. Now we're sitting with, you know, 60 plus customers, you know, nearly $2 million in revenue, and thinking about every step you hit along that journey and just how exciting and how rare it is to be able to go on that journey and how few people take something from nothing and build something out of it. And I feel really blessed to be there and to build a company in the image, you know, that we always wanted, right? Where we talk about this a lot, like, you know, obviously I'm the boss. I always joke, like, it's, you know, you don't see those power dynamics, right? But from what my employees tell me, they enjoy working here and they're happy and they feel valued and respected. And like, and that's such a, you know, I think about that a lot, that, hey, like, there's 12 people, you know, including me, who we support their life, right? We pay their salaries and we give them, you know, we always talk a lot about that work shouldn't be your primary source of purpose in life. It should be something beyond that. But you spend 40 plus hours a week doing it. It should be something. It should be some part of that. And to be able to give that to people and give them, you know, part of the reason why they're proud of who they are and proud of what they do. I mean, what a gift that is as well, you know? So, yeah, you know, just growth and growing the right way, you know? I think that's kind of the goals here.
I love what you just said there, that growth in your vision. And this is the key thing, isn't it? Because you get your vision changes over time. And the more you grow, you obviously say your growth vision to get to a million was one vision. Then you went to two as a second vision. Five is another vision. Everything looks different, but you've got to grow it continuously in your vision. And I have absolutely no doubt at all that you and Jeremy are going to hit those milestones. You know, just by spending time with you alone, I can actually just see it and feel it going forward. So if there was one piece of advice, it's a bit of a loaded question as your final question, Adam. If there's one piece of advice that you want to leave the listeners and the viewers who are founders and leaders in their field, who have potentially, let's say, hit a plateau in their growth.
Sure.
What one piece of advice would you give them?
Yeah. You know, I think there's a cliche, I believe it's in recovery circles, but I always loved it. I heard it. It's nothing changes if nothing changes, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to just shake things up sometimes. And that's not like a full rewrite. That's not like a, you know... I think in this world, one of the tough things is everyone you talk to will have a different idea of how you can become a billionaire, you know, and you're trying to filter that through and filter that through with your own experience, your own knowledge. But, you know, we're big believers in, you know, in the generic sort of scientific method. And a lot of that is you change one variable at a time and you see what happens. And, you know, I had a friend a while ago, I asked a fellow CEO and I said, it's so tough, you know, there's the paralysis of choice. There's so many different options. And one of the hardest things about this role is that you make a decision And you won't know for 3 to 6 months if it was the right decision. But you have to make it nonetheless, right? And I asked, like, how do you deal with that? And he said, you know, I talk to the people, like my advisors and the people I trust, and then I make the decision that serves the moment and I move on, you know? And I thought that was such a great one. It wasn't the right decision or the best. It was the decision that serves the moment. And so I think when you're at that plateau, you got to try to find something, you know, how do I make something actionable? How do I try to push us forward? How can I, you know, what have I been doing that isn't working? What is an assumption I've made? Like, we talk a lot about that. That's more my engineering-ish mind, right? Of like, you know, we all have assumptions we live on. If something's not working, then one of those assumptions is wrong. So start testing them, you know, one at a time. But yeah, I think that nothing changes, you know, to make it a trite line, that nothing changes and nothing changes. So if you're at a plateau, you know, give something else a go. It ain't working for you anyways, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great, great piece of advice and insight to end on. So listen, Adam, if people want to get hold of you, want to potentially work with you or learn more about what is it that you do, what's the best way that they can do that?
Yeah, I mean, go to our website, cloverleaf.ai, fill out a form, you know, schedule a demo. I'll throw it out there. My email is adam@cloverleaf.ai. Hopefully I didn't just open it up to all the cold outreach. I mean, I'm already getting it anyway, so it can't be much worse. But, you know, we're pretty reachable as a team. Like I said, the give first thing I mentioned earlier, like I am always looking to help people. You know, part of that train of thought is when I help people, it makes it much easier for me to ask for help from other people because I know I'm helping too. So, yeah, I look at it as mutually beneficial. I love learning. I love, you know, sharing what I have and learning from other people. So hit us up, talk to us. And if you sell into the government or you know somebody who does and you want to sell more contracts faster, come talk to us.
Well, I'll make sure those links are in the show notes below. Awesome. So they can just do a one click and straight to you. Yeah, so Adam, thank you very much for your time. It is truly been pleasurable chatting to you. Very, very insightful and very, very inspirational. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Gary. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. And as per usual, you already know by now, if you have taken something that Adam has said and thought, wow, I'm going to run with that one. I'm going to pick that up and run with it. Please make sure you like it and comment it so other people can see what you picked up as well that could be useful to them. But more importantly, as always, share. We learn and grow the fastest by standing on the shoulders of giants. So if you have learned from Adam today, please make sure that you're sharing this episode as of the other episodes of all our other great leaders as well to help us and all of us grow. So until the next episode, keep striving, keep working hard, but more importantly, be profitable, and we'll see you on the next episode. See you later. Bye-bye.